Chris Hansen. He's got 22, a new career high.
He'll have to shoot from wide out now. It's in the hands of Worthington.
On the buzzer, Mark Worthington.
He's again.
There is the Has Been Hoops podcast, and I guess we got a good feedback from last week, Chris. So I guess before we even get out of the blocks, cheers, Chris. Cheers. Welcome back to the country. In New Zealand, mate. You got to watch your team, Taranaki, play in the first home game of the season. Tell us what the last couple of days have been like for you.
It's been unreal. We got in a day and a bit before. We had a couple of flight delays. So for all intents and purposes, we got in the day before the game, and, you know, we get to meet with some of the key partners. With some of the basketball events I've done with some of the players over the last couple of years, it was sort of that mode again the day before, and getting the venue set up and, you know, ironing out some of the wrinkles and understanding how the sponsors would be treated and all that sort of thing. But no, look, it was really fun. I didn't actually know where I'd watch the game from. And, you know, we got the pregame done. We got around to the sponsors. The crew on the ground over there did a fantastic job of not only selling the game, but, you know, producing it or getting the... I just went and found a little corner I watched, and... You know, when I go over now, I stay with Sam McKinnon. And so we got to talk a little bit, and just to see some of the things he'd been working on already and the improvement that the group's made from watching the first two games on TV already to watching one in person at home was really good. And the feedback was great from the locals. There's always a little bit of uncertainty when there's been a community club and it's taken over by private ownership. And all we've ever said is we hope that, you know, our relationships and the people we know and maybe some of the basketball we've seen around the globe, we might be able to provide some assistance. And, yeah, it'll take a little bit of time, but I think they'll start to see what we see. But, look, the group was great. And I think I said to you off air that you kind of know you're in a good group when the game's finished, or you can sort of evaluate the group more so away from the game than during the game. And everyone gets along great after a couple of beers. We went and had a nice night out and, you know, didn't break off in a group. So guys were great. Probably a little bit too much of a headache coming back the next day than what I would have liked, but really excited about the group, really excited about the team, and a really enjoyable few days.
I don't think I've ever asked you this question, but there's been a really popular show on TV called Welcome to Wrexham, where Ryan Reynolds takes over a soccer team and all that. And I guess his thoughts were, you know, they were going into a smaller community. They were Americans that have bought into this team. Have you ever watched that documentary or the show at all? And is there any lessons that you learned from that you brought into ownership for yourself? That's a very serious question.
No, you haven't. And it's an interesting one, because let me start with this, is that, yes, I have. We've got an ownership group, and Brett McCallum, who's the majority owner, actually bought that up, and he's got the means, being a media company, to produce something like that. But the more we talked about it, was just doing it, it was copying. It didn't seem authentic, and it seemed like it would intrude on the guys. And so that got scrapped reasonably quickly. But I look at it in a really, really similar way to what I look at Hotel Trentham, in that I'm coming into two small communities with knowledge in a couple of areas. With the Ayers, it's basketball. With Hotel Trentham, it's, well, probably beer. But I just think the lessons are to be authentic. The lessons are to try to bring some sense of global educational knowledge to a small town with the right intent to provide something. Yeah, you know what? I'll go back. When I played, I was kind of one of those ones, and I know you are too, that never mind of getting in the car and driving and doing a clinic or an appearance in the country. And every time you do, or sometimes you do, you get in the car and it's a pain in the ass and you don't quite have the time. But every time you do, I just felt like as athletes, we're able to impact more people in small towns because they don't have the access to some of the knowledge we get in bigger cities as often as what we do. So to be able to share that in some small capacity in Taranaki and in New Plymouth is fun. But half the battle is standing back and letting others do the job and not professing to know more than anyone else, which I don't. So I'm excited about the people we've been able to bring in to the team. So to go back to Wrexham, I'd like to think that without Sam coaching and perhaps without us being involved, Taranaki might not have had the opportunity to watch a talent like Sam Froling for an entire season, that they may not have gotten a Mitch McCarron to not only watch as a community, but for the young players in the community to learn from someone like that, from both of them. Same with Sam McKinnon. So I'd like to think that some of the people we've been able to appeal to and be in the ground full time is the biggest difference we can make in the short term. And I hope that that grows our culture. So it's probably not the answer you probably wanted, but I love being able to impact small communities that may not have had the resources afforded to them that larger cities sometimes have.
Yeah. Well, sticking on maybe not basketball just yet, but last time you had hip surgery, we were teammates at the Melbourne Tigers. You're going in for hip surgery again tomorrow and we're teammates on this podcast. Is it the same hip? And then afterwards, can we tell the story about New Zealand when you came in about halfway through the season and I knew that it was going to be your last one because of the conversations that we had, and then we'll talk about what happened in New Zealand in a game.
We can always tell that story. It's a one game I'm really, really disappointed I lost the footage to.
Yeah.
Because that was fun. Yes, it is my same hip. They wanted to give me every surgeon. It was funny because I've always seen David Young, and even 15 years ago, there were a lot of people with doing hips in the AFL that were doing it differently, and there was new technology, and I say that inverted commas. And so I went around and saw three of the AFL just to get multiple opinions, knowing that I would always go to Dave last. Every single person that said they could fix it said, you need a hip replacement now. This is in 2009. Dave looked at it and he said, most people would probably say that if they don't know what they're doing, but I reckon I can tidy up. He said, the longer you don't put anything into your body, the better. And so he said, it'll get you back on the court. I'm not sure in what capacity, but, you know, it might give you another 4 or 5 years before you need a replacement. And he said, there's a thing called a resurfacing that's not quite as intrusive, doesn't go so far into your bone. It's essentially a ceramic implant onto the top of your femur, into a ceramic implant into the joint of your hip. He said, it's only been around for a little while. Never be the first in it with a new technology, never be the last with an old one. So he said, by the time 4 or 5 years rolls around, I reckon we'll have enough information to know that it suits you. It got me 15 years that operation. But to an extent now my hips are fucked. They're just, you look at the x-ray and it's like a crime scene. It's ridiculous. But he did get me back when others said that I'd never play again. And yeah, as I spoke to you, I just knew that I couldn't train how I needed to train. And I didn't play very well coming back. And we didn't make the playoffs. And yeah, we were still a small chance going into that New Zealand game. And there's a part of me that all of me wanted the playoffs, but even if not, I just wanted that game. I wanted a game where I felt like I could prove that I'd gotten back a little bit, if that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess New Zealand was that. I mean, you go with the story, but I mean, I just felt like I had probably three of the best minutes of basketball I reckon I've ever had. We were down maybe 10 or 12 with, might have been less than 3 minutes. Couple of minutes to go and found a way to...
We were down double digits for sure with a couple of minutes to go, and It's probably the one game where I think it was probably the best 3 minutes of basketball I can remember in the NBL, as far as one person doing all the damage on both ends of the court. And I guess this story goes back a little bit for you and I, just because, when we first started playing against each other, we didn't know each other, and we probably didn't like each other that much. And it wasn't until we...
not probably.
Yep, we didn't like each other. And we got to be teammates on the national team and realised that we were very similar in a lot of ways and enjoyed a lot of the same things. And I think coming off the bench, like, we found a way to have fun playing next to each other. And then obviously I'd signed with the Melbourne Tigers after the South Dragons had fallen over, and the plan was for us to have a bit of fun playing next to each other. You were the best centre in the league. I thought I was the best power forward in the league at that time. And unfortunately, the season got derailed because you missed the first half of the season with this hip surgery, and we were probably too far behind. You were frustrated once you got back because you weren't playing to the calibre that you would like to. I was frustrated because we had a team of, you know, we had a front line of Sam McKinnon, myself and yourself. And you and Sam retired at the end of that season. But on paper, we were the champs. On the court, we were far from it. And we went into that New Zealand game a bit deflated at that stage, and knowing that the season was probably dwindling. And you'd obviously spoken to me and told me, you know, this was going to be your last season. And it was almost something, if my memory serves me right, there was a sort of a timeout at around the 4.5-5 minute mark. And it's one of those games as a player that you can look around and you're like, shit, I think we can actually do this. Like, if we just get one or two things to go right for us, we're playing good enough where we're still in touch. But it's obviously going to take a little bit. And like I said, that 3 minutes from you, whether it was blocks on the defensive end, whether it was grabbing rebounds over the top of people, knocking down three-pointers, and the joy that you had on your face and having that moment that you talked about, of that I'm back to where, you know, you were the best center in the league. We had no right to win that game, and we found a way to win it, and it was mainly off the back of what you were able to do in the last couple of minutes. And that was probably, outside of the national team stuff, that was probably my favourite game that I've played with you as a Melbourne Tiger.
It was fun. And, yeah, the probably the poetic part of it, for lack of a better term, was maybe the one time I had to give it up. It found its way to you in the corner and you hit that three to, I think, get us back to within maybe two. But that was a lot of fun. And, you know what, but the energy and the effort it took to get there, it was not sustainable, and that's probably why. And, you know, I always felt like I could get back and play, but never felt like I could train to be consistent enough. And where, as it was at the time, and you described it, was we had a really veteran team. There's a big part of me that reckoned if we had a young center, like if we had Sam Froehlich today and I was considering retirement, but had a young kid who was ready to start, and I felt like I could come off the bench and help his development and play fifth, I would have done that. But that there was no one coming into the group, and, you know, we were veterans. So
we had Daniel Johnson at that stage.
Like I said.
Yeah.
But there was no one worth working with. Just while we're blowing around trumpet a little bit, Luke Kendall jumped on an aeroplane today. Mitch McCarron jumped on an aeroplane today to fly across to Denver and be inducted into the Metro State Hall of Fame. You're going to be inducted as well. I know you've got a new job, and we don't need to get in that for everyone, and you couldn't make it. Got to be a little bit disappointing as well as being proud, mate, but what does being inducted into a Hall of Fame look like from the other side of the world for you this week?
I haven't given it much thought, to tell you the truth.
Well, think about it now.
And I mean, I've been asked for the last couple of years to be inducted, and one of my big ones was I wanted Kendall to be inducted, and the time that they induct Kendall is the time that I can't go. But I'm still happy to go into this year's class, and one of the reasons I'm probably more proud of Kendall than what I am of my own achievements, to tell you the truth, because obviously I've got a fair bit of recognition since I've come back to the country, but what Luke did in college was unbelievable. He was incredible as a college player, and he was incredible as a pro as well, and not to discount what he did in his time in Australia, but Kendall did some amazing things as a player over there, and some of my fondest memories is him scoring 38 points to get us to the Final Four in South Dakota in their home gym, as they were the number one in the country at that stage. And he played all 40 minutes of that game, and we were running just pin down after pin down. And, mate, he didn't feel like he missed too many shots that game, and dragged us into the Final Four of the Elite Eight, I think it was, actually. But just unbelievable. And he was, you know, when I got there as a freshman and he was already a sophomore, he was already very established in the team and one of the main scoring threats in the team. And he just had an ability to find a way to score. And that's where the chemistry for Kendall and I sort of happened. Then it rolled into the Sydney Kings, and you know, and I know that he's one of my best mates. He's one of your good mates now as well. And we wouldn't find one of them more loyal. The one thing I like about Kendall, the same thing that I like about you, is you're loyal to a fault. You're two of the guys that I know that if I was to pick up the phone and told you I need you to come over and see me ASAP, I know you'd probably get on the next flight to come see me. And Kendall's been that way since college. You've been that way since really 2008-ish. We're old. But I'm super, super proud of Kendall and him achieving the Hall of Fame. I'm super happy for Macca and him getting recognised for his contribution to Metro State and what he's done. And obviously I'm proud as punch being a kid from the country in WA that went on to, you know, let's be honest, have a decent season in college for the first three you could probably take, but to have a good final senior season, you know, I'm happy that it was the launch pad for my professional career.
Mate, so what we're going to do, I've just decided, so you got no say in this, that when Luke gets back, I reckon it's about time we got him on. So we can make this conversation two-sided, mate, because you're both going into the Hall of Fame. I know there's enough people who listen to this who I want to dig into some of the stories from over there with both you two. But while we're on Luke, before we move on to basketball, ironically, he's actually sent me a message today and I'm going out. So one of the things Luke does, you know, he works at Hoop City, who have sponsored our podcast through its first season. He's running an AAU tour with our good mate Chris Warren over in the United States, and they've actually had a couple of injuries to players who are going over. So what he's asked me to do is, if anyone out here, and they've got it to a couple of people, but if you're a high-level wing or a big, shoot Luke an email. I'm going to give you the details real quick to see if you think this might suit you. If you have aspirations to go to college, you'll be playing with an elite high school basketball team. So in Los Angeles, you go to USC Pepperdine, you get to the Clippers to play in the Los Angeles AAU event. You've got Pepperdine in there, I mentioned that. You go to Indiana, Butler, you've got private workouts with Division I college coaches. You've got another AAU event while you're in Indiana. He won't let me say this, but I don't care. I reckon if you go over there and perform well, you know, it's that sort of one foot in the door to a scholarship to college basketball. So the dates of this trip are June 30 until 15 July. I don't know the exact price. I think it's about 10 grand. But if anyone has any interest in that, the email address you can get Luke and give him a bit of a congratulations about the Hall of Fame, even if you don't want to go on the trip. Let's just give out his details because he's asked me. Luke K, L-U-K-E-K, at hoopcity.com.au. Again, that's Luke K at hoopcity.com.au. To those of you who it might interest, good luck. It's one hell of a trip, and I know the coach and the people around it. It's going to be unreal. Mate, let's get on to the NBL before we get to the NBA playoffs. You mentioned you and Luke at the Sydney Kings. Xavier Cooks is coming back. Izzy Liefers coming to the Kings. I love Kelly Lapepe. We've spoken to him through season one of this. I can't wait for the Australian basketball public to see Kelly Lapepe. And I can't wait for all of the memes and all of the media to compare him to Mika Vekona and all of these boys. But I tell you what, Kelly Lapepe is the strongest underage basketball player I have ever seen. He is a workhorse. He's one of the hardest working guys you'll meet. You thought Mika Vekona was strong. Kelly Lapepe is stronger. And he shoots the ball really, really well. He's been a four-year senior at LMU. Or did he do five?
Five.
I think he's a five-year senior at LMU, which actually surprised me because he might be fair to describe him as a reluctant scholar. So good job. And Bull Qual's going to the Sydney Kings as well, who I know you're big on. But Brian – oh, and they've brought in – cheers. They've also brought in Tyler Robertson, another one of our under-18 and under-20 Vic Metro boys who good on him for getting that. You know, he was one of those guys who had a choice to make midway through with his body. He's made a good choice. And, again, we see what Gorgian's doing.
He's played at Portland, correct?
Played at Portland. He's bringing in talent, but he's bringing in youthful talent, and I know that he'll be able to get the imports to drive this thing. So already, what are you thinking of the Kings lineup just as we go through that? I actually thought Izzy Liafa was an interesting signing.
Yeah, well, first things first, like you've already, I'm pretty sure you're Kelly Lapepe's agent the way that you just spoke him up, but I agree with everything that you just said. So watch this space and the Australian public fall in love with him. Bull Qual as well is just, between Cooks, Lapepe, and Qual, you've got three hard-nosed defenders there that suit the style that Gorgian coaches. Izzy Liafa is that scoring punch that he loves to get off the come off the bench. I think he will actually fit in with the coaching style that Gorge has. That he will play good enough defense. You just got to put up with some of his bad shot making decisions or shot taking decisions at times. But yeah, how can you not enjoy what Gorge is doing there? I mean, Cooks and Bull Qual is probably quality enough to come into the Sydney Kings outfit, but the unknown is Kelly Lapepe, like we spoke about, Tyler Robinson, who we know as well. They're two really, really good pickups. My question turns to the center position and who they get to fill in that spot, because we know that Jordy Hunter's probably on the move to the Phoenix, but knowing Gorge, I'm sure he does have great connections to import, so the import that they bring into this will definitely complement Cooks and Qual.
So Jordy Hunter's going to the Phoenix. Nathan Sobey's going to the Phoenix. We haven't heard too much more. A couple of the end of the bench guys miss out on having their contracts renewed.
And we should also say our friend Simon Mitchell is back at the Phoenix as well.
Simon Mitchell is back at the Phoenix. He's back as, what is he, general manager of basketball is a term. So he'll be helping put together this roster as well. But they're the key pieces right now. Not sure what else they're looking for. Haven't heard too much more, but those two will be keen. I think that size Jordy Hunter provides, I think that's a really underrated get. I think I like him a lot.
So do I. Well, it tells me that if they've got Hunter, they've got Creek, and they've got Sobey, they're looking for a one and a three, and then...
Well, Creek sounds like he might be heading overseas to Europe or to China to...
Man, I'd be interested to see. I don't think they get Sobey so easily coming out of contract because, as he said, he's got unfinished business with Mitch Creek as far as what they wanted to do. They obviously played together in Adelaide. They got to a grand final there together. Obviously, we'd have to watch this space with Creek. He's probably going to earn more money going elsewhere if it is China. But at the end of the day, we can only wait for a couple more months to see what happens in this space.
The other two main ones, I guess, especially now, Mitch McCarron's off to the Breakers, and that was a really nice guy. I had a really nice conversation with Mitch, and just the seamless transition that he's going to make geographically, even with his family, that he can actually get part organised while he's over at Taranaki playing in the NZNBL with us, and get ready for Auckland. And, you know, we've had a good conversation about what Modi Mayor wants to see from him and get from him when the season starts. And it's exactly what we'd like to see him get back to as well. So that was, we're really, really interested in that. We're really happy for Mitch to get that deal done. We're really happy that it might be as seamless as it can possibly be, having been over there. And the other one, for all intents and purposes, he may be replacing, but Will McDowell-White. Clearly, there are a lot of teams with a lot of interest in Will, but my mail is that he ends up at the Brisbane Bullets, on top of others who might be or might have seemed more preferable, or others might have thought a bigger chance. But I think we will end up seeing Will McDowell-White back in Queensland, closer to his family and friends, playing for the Bullets this year coming up, which would be a big get for them to replace Nathan Sobey.
Well, I think any team that got Will McDowell-White was going to be very happy. I mean, I seem to think that if you can get a quality Australian point guard, it goes a long way in helping your roster build. It allows you to get a more dynamic wings and as imports or a quality big. So obviously they lose Nathan Sobey. They pick up Will McDowell-White. If you're Brisbane, you're very happy with that. And, you know, I'm sure that is disappointing for New Zealand that they lost him, because I feel like he's played his best basketball in New Zealand to this point.
You know what he did, but at some level, with them bringing Parker Jackson Cartwright back, he probably wasn't utilised to the extent a player of his calibre could have been utilised.
He became injured a lot as well.
He was as well, but I would think that an appealing part of him getting out of that system, playing alongside an undersized, absolute scoring guard with a foreman, and his name escapes me at the moment, one of the best in the league before he got hurt, he will have a more important role on the offensive end going to a team like Brisbane. And I think that would be appealing as well from a basketball sense.
Yep, don't disagree.
Anything else with the NBL, mate, before we move to the NBA?
Nah, that's enough for the NBL.
Yeah, fair enough too. Hey, we've seen that the two games today, and I don't really want to analyse them, but just so we can timestamp when we're recording this. The Lakers are through into the seventh seed. The Pelicans gave them a shake. I was really impressed with Zion Williamson's game, but, you know, on the big stage, he stepped up and played well, but left the court the last 3 minutes right when they were making their run and tied the game. So we'll watch with space to see if he's back for the second play-in game. But the Warriors team we saw, Steph Curry, 5 points, one rebound, one assist at halftime in a game that means, in most people's minds, everything to them to stay alive. And the Sacramento Kings run over the top of them. Klay Thompson goes 0 of 10, and the Warriors, when they stepped the tempo up with the NBA playoffs, looked old. You said it, I think, halfway through this season that they were done. I think the game today rubber-stamped that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Warriors have been just treading water as far as I'm concerned. And Sacramento have always been probably the better team out of those two teams for the last 5 years or 3 years at least. And I think you have to have some serious consideration of blowing up this Warriors team now. Like, with Clay going for 0 points. Steph had to burden too much of the load all season just to get to the 10th spot. This is not the Warriors that we had grown accustomed to, that were winning playoffs and all that. I think it's high time that they blew this thing up and started from scratch and build around a Steph Curry that is aging. You know, I mean, he's not young. But if you can get pieces for Clay, if you can get pieces for Draymond, there's business decisions to be made here. And I think the only person you'd keep is Steph at the moment.
There is the Eastern Conference play-ins to happen tomorrow as we record, and then the second or the eighth seed play-in games as well. Mate, without knowing who's going to get through them, what are you looking forward to? Now, we know most of the matchups. We know what teams are coming into the playoffs looking like. What are you interested in? Teams, players, whatever it is.
I'm so looking forward to Miami Heat losing to Philly and then finding out some way to win the Eastern Conference Final from there. Like, it's just what they do. It's just this zombie bullshit. Shout out Jamie Stabe once again. The zombie Heat, they just find a way. And maybe this year they don't find a way. But for me, it's definitely to see probably the collapse of the Bucks under Doc Rivers. Fascinated to watch.
You've been promoting this for a long time, haven't you?
Yeah. I'm fascinated to watch how badly he fucks this up. I'm interested to see Joe Mazzulla coaching in crunch situations for the Celtics. And just the little bit of me, and I don't know why, fuck, I'm going for the Knicks. I want the Knicks to do something really good.
Yeah, we've been in the Knicks for a long time.
Yeah, but like even more so now that Julius Randle can't be the scapegoat because he's been shit for the last couple of years. But I just want to see how far they can go. And if I can trade Julius Randle and get a better piece for that in the future, where does this Knicks team go? So to me, the Heat to somehow they'll lose to Philly, win against, I'm guessing, Chicago, play against the Celtics in the 1v8 matchup, beat the Celtics somehow, and then play against the winner of Orlando and Cavaliers, which will be Cleveland. Yeah.
Oh, you're saying they've already beaten Boston, have you?
Yeah, they've beaten Boston.
My mistake.
Then they'll play the Cavaliers, probably beat Cleveland and face the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Final, and somehow they'll beat the Knicks, and then they'll face off against the Denver Nuggets in the championship and lose. So that's what I'm predicting.
Whatever it is you're drinking, I want some.
It's called a Bolter Easy Hazy tonight.
There you go. Right, okay. I'm amazed that the Knicks have gotten into a number two seed, and we've followed Leon Rose putting this team together for the last 4 or 5 years now, but they've always been building for that franchise guy. It's accidentally become Jalen Brunson, but there's still another big piece to add to this. But the way they've done it and the success they've had is really fascinating. More than predicting it to happen, I really hope it happens for them. I'm interested to see what Boston look like when their sphincters tighten a little bit. They've played without any pressure whatsoever on them for a long time now, and they've been cruising. And look, they could come out and blow whoever it is they play against the first round away, whether it's your Heat or whether it's Chicago or whatever it is. They could go and sweep it and become the juggernaut that they've been all year. I just don't quite see that. I've actually tipped Indiana to beat Milwaukee. I just reckon Giannis is going to have a harder time getting back than what a lot of people think.
They've also got Doc Rivers as a coach.
This is true. I'm really looking forward to the Mavericks-Clippers series. I don't know which way it's going to go. There's a lot of offensive arsenal out there. There's a lot of reluctant defenders out there. There are a lot of older players on the Clippers that are injury prone. I don't know where that's going, but I'm really, really looking forward to watching OKC. I can't wait. I love that Josh Giddey gets a chance. I'm fascinated to see how Josh Giddey responds to defenses daring him to be a shooter, daring him to make plays when it matters in a game 4, 5, 6. I'm really hopeful of seeing Josh Giddey take another step in his development because he's had a rough year with a lot of things that are going on. He's found his form, but I'm fascinated to see, A, how teams guard him, but more importantly, B, how he responds.
I only talked about the East. I'm fascinated to see Mike Malone and LeBron James get into an all-in brawl at some stage with that Denver Lakers series. I'm fascinated to see how Minnesota and Phoenix, I think that might be the most exciting series out of the lot, just because so much has been spoken about Minnesota's defense, so much has been spoken about Phoenix's offense. I think Minnesota is the better team right now, but I've said from the get-go that I think they might be fool's gold as well.
You sure did. Based on your predictions, you're tipping Phoenix?
Yeah, I think the Phoenix will win. We've already spoken about the Mavs and the Clippers. I think that's just – those games are going to be like 140 to 145.
So back up, because one of the other teams you said was overrated was Dallas. How have you seen their progression the last third of this season?
I think the trade deadline brought in some great defensive pieces for him with Washington and Gafford that they sorely needed before. Like, it was so guard dominated as far as what they got offensively from Kyrie and Luka that we never really spoke about anything besides Derek Lively being a lob threat for Dallas. But now they've got defense at the rim. They've got a four-man that can stand up as well. In Washington, I really like what they did at the trade. I think out of all the teams, they added the most important pieces at the trade deadline to make that make sense for their team. I think they beat the Clippers. I really do. But once they get past the Clippers, then they play against
potentially OKC or Pelicans or.
It could be
Sacramento
if Zion doesn't get up. But interesting to say the least. Jason Kidd still his job on the line if he doesn't win it this season.
Could be. I think he's done a bit. He's turned now. The one series I want you to tip: the offense versus defense, and my little Cinderella story: Cleveland versus Orlando. You got the offense of Cleveland and the speed and the scoring ability of Donovan Mitchell. Or have you got one of the best defensive teams in the league, the Orlando Magic, to get through that series?
Joe Ingles and his knowledge of Donovan Mitchell will shut down Cleveland. And I don't know. I really hope Orlando does well. I really do.
So do I.
Then they're going to get swept by the Miami Heat after they beat the Celtics.
Jesus. Here's something that bothered me a little bit. I over the last week, we've heard a lot of the media over in the United States who've had a vote, a ballot for MVP, all NBA teams, all these different awards, come out and give their votes and share them publicly. You're unable to bet on it anymore, so they've been able to share them publicly. And I've been amazed how often I've heard comments like, you know, for LeBron to be doing something like this at 40 or... And I'll use LeBron again. He hasn't had a season like this in 5 years. It's really bothering me hearing these people who have votes comparing a player to a previous version of themselves. That's not the award. The award is strictly comparing them regardless of age, regardless of what they did last year or what their reputation is previously. You're picking the award solely on what you've seen over the previous 82 games, period. So it bothers me probably a little bit too much when someone gets a nod on an award because they've improved so much over the last. It's irrelevant. You're just nodding. I thought you might add or disagree or something.
I still hear all the comparisons. Can we just say that LeBron's fucking amazing what he's doing still?
Of course he is.
Just that.
And the other part is
I don't giving, think he has to be a first-team All-NBA or a second-team All-NBA. He's still a very fucking good player.
What about the one you're giving someone no respect by not – I've just said they're the fourth best player on the planet. That's not respectful because there have been three other guys who have had incredible seasons.
Yep.
That sort of commentary – yeah. Anyway, the Olympic Games, Team USA have come out and said we're going to send these guys over, and a lot of people went shit. So let's start with the guards and get to the bigs, and tell me how this roster sounds and if there are any flaws in it. Steph Curry, Devin Booker, Holiday, Halliburton, Edwards, Tatum, LeBron, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, Bam Adebayo, and they've still got a player up their sleeve.
Oh, they gave it to Kawhi Leonard today.
Did they really? So there you go. They don't lose.
That is the best basketball team that has ever been put together.
I think that might be right.
That is the best basketball team that has ever, ever been put together. You're looking at Tyrese Halliburton not getting many minutes. You're looking at probably Bam Adebayo not getting many minutes. It is the best basketball team ever compiled, ever. It would beat the Dream Team. It would beat the Redeem Team. It would beat any team. It is the best basketball team ever. And you don't just give people a gold medal for what they are on paper, but if these guys click, no one will get within 20 points of these guys every game.
I tend to think you might be right. We'll do a little bit more homework on some of those other teams as well. Or if anyone's listening, come and tell us who the best USA team you've ever seen on paper or ever seen compete is, and tell us where this one sits. Before we go, mate, the WNBA draft happened. Congratulations, Nadia Poch, the last pick in the first round, off to Atlanta. A Dandenong Rangers girl back even when I was director of coaching at the club and on the women's side, and to see her development, it's a credit to her. Izzy Borlase also got drafted off to Atlanta. Whether or not she'll get to a training camp, whether or not she gets a roster spot, that'll be on her. But yeah, nice to see Jazz Shelley's name called out as well. And it's interesting that elite shooters are valuable on good teams. And Jazz Shelley may not have been she might have been picked about 30, mid-30s or something like that, but she may not be the 33rd or whatever she was best player available, but she does that one thing better than 99%, and that's shoot the basketball. And that's incredibly valuable. So she may very well, maybe even more so than Izzy Borlase, find herself on a roster just because of her ability to space the floor if she's got talent around her. So congratulations to those three girls. It's, you know, we can't wait to see. It's slightly different. It doesn't guarantee them anything. Getting drafted in the WNBA doesn't actually guarantee them a spot, a cent. They've now got to go and earn it. So good luck in training camp. Go and earn that contract, and let's keep representing Australian basketball in the men's and women's sides over in the United States.
I think it's another really cool step for the women's game here in Australia that we continually see young talent get drafted into the WNBA. And like you said, it's one thing to get drafted. It's another thing to stay there, and we hope that all three of them continue to forge their own path and make a name for himself over there, as they've made a name for himself over in college and in the WNBL. And always super proud of anyone that gets drafted NBA or WNBA. And for those three girls, couldn't be happier for them after today's result.
Well said, mate. Well, we've got, mate, by the time I speak to you again, I'll have a new hip. I'll probably would have watched a lot of the
I cannot wait for FaceTime when you're off your face. And
you're not the first person who's told me that today. We caught up with Guru and Stabe, and they've promised to FaceTime as quick as I can. They can get me to answer the phone and record the conversations.
I'm sure Parky would be a part of that as well. And
No, it's no. So now we'll be watching plenty of basketball. We'll see you on the other side. And for those of you who are still with us, Luke Kendall, AAU Basketball Tour, lukek@hoopcity.com.au. Tell him congratulations, even if you don't want to go.
Knock, knock.